We're going to spend a little bit of time tonight just kind of as an introduction to Ezekiel. However, before the evening is over with, we'll try to get into and through the first chapter. We know that the prophet Ezekiel is the author of this book. It was written between 593 B.C. I'm sorry?
Hang on. I'm going to mute everyone's microphone, and then, Ron, you're going to have to unmute.
Oh, okay.
All right, go ahead and unmute, Ron.
Okay. Okay, we know that Ezekiel was the author. We know the book was written between 593 B.C. and 565 B.C. during Babylonian captivity. A lot of this will be familiar information to you because we just got through studying the book of Jeremiah with Ted. So a lot of this that we study will be kind of a continuation of Jeremiah's prophecies and also his work, although Jeremiah stayed in Judah, Ezekiel was deported into Babylon, and he did and spent his time there, and that's where he prophesied. He ministered to his generation who was super sinful. They were just absolutely hopeless. By his prophecies, he attempted to bring them to repentance and confidence in the future. He taught that God works through human messengers. We see that today, even in defeat and despair. God's people need to acknowledge his being the king. And this they were not doing back in those days. Taught us that God's word never fails. Also, up until then, people thought that God could only be worshiped in Jerusalem because that's where the temple was located. But now Ezekiel is telling them that God can be worshiped anywhere. And also, if they expect God's blessings, then they must obey God, not any different than it is today. Ezekiel's book can be broken down into four sections, chapters 1 through 24. He prophesies about the ruin and the destruction of Jerusalem. In 25 to 32, he places judgment upon the nearby nations. We found the same thing in the book of Jeremiah. Chapter 33 is his last call for repentance. And then chapters 34 to 48, he prophesies the future restoration of Israel. We have to be a little bit careful in some of these studies because this is where a lot of prophecies, a lot of visions are, and some of these people such as the Baptist and so forth, premillennialists and whatnot, are use a lot of this to prophesy about the future of the new earth, new heavens, and that Jesus is going to come down and reign for 1,000 years, et cetera, et cetera. So we'll have to be a little bit careful how we study this, make sure that we don't find confusion there. Very little is known about Ezekiel. We know he was the son of a man called Buzi. He lived in Jerusalem. He was deported to Babylon by Nebuchadnezzar when he was 25 years of age. Now, this is assuming that what most people believe, he was 30 years old when he first was called by God. In the first verse of the book of Ezekiel, he speaks about being 30. If that is correct, he was 30 years old, and he was 25 years old when he was deported from Judea into Babylon. We know from chapter 24, we'll get there, that he was married. And in chapter 24, he loses his wife. But there are no children that are recorded. He's the only Hebrew priest who ministered to the Jews or the Israelites outside of the Holy Land. And here he is, he's been 5 years now, in this, Tel Aviv, which is a village outside of Babylon. And it says it was on the river Chebar. I studied that a little bit, and it talked about that being not the actual Euphrates River, but a canal which was dug, as kind of a loop around the city of Babylon and to the south. So I can't imagine how those people dug a canal that far out in the desert 2,500 years ago. Pretty difficult. Most believe that Ezekiel was 30, as I mentioned, when he was called by God. He was a priest, but he had some experience in the temple. We go back to Numbers chapter 4, verse 3 and 4, and it talks about the age of duty of Levites who worked in the temple. And that was, they began at age 30, and they served in the temple, served as a priest for 20 years up to age 50. Now, I don't know if that was a retirement age, but that was the age that that they spent. Know that I've forgotten his name now, that wrote the book, The History of the Jews. He speaks of Ezekiel.
Josephus.
Thank you, Lenny. I appreciate that. His name skipped my mind. Josephus wrote that he was a fairly young man, but I think that he was experienced, maybe a little bit older than Josephus might have believed. We also know that Jeremiah was 20 when God first started working with him. So this may or may not be accurate, his age of 30. There could be other interpretations. 30 years of Jehoiachin's age, 585 BC. Could be 30 years after Josiah's reform. Could be the 30th year of the current Jubilee, and there's a half a dozen other possible explanations. But most assume that he was 30 years old. He was a contemporary of Jeremiah and Daniel. He was younger than Jeremiah. I think he knew Jeremiah probably quite well. They both were in Jerusalem. Although at the time they were in Jerusalem, Ezekiel did not prophesy. Jeremiah stayed Israel, in Jerusalem, while Ezekiel was deported in the second deportation to Jerusalem. Daniel was also deported to Babylon, but he prophesied and was part of the royal court. So he may or may not have known Ezekiel, even though they were in the same area at the same time. Jeremiah, as I mentioned, was stayed in Jerusalem and prophesied there against the people there in Jerusalem. He was given a choice. You could go with the deportees or he could stay in Jerusalem. And we studied that in the book of Jeremiah with Ted's class. And Jeremiah chose to stay in Jerusalem. But because he prophesied on Nebuchadnezzar's behalf, he was given a choice and the freedom to live where he wanted to. Ezekiel was a prophet in his own right, but he prophesied while he was in Babylon. Much of his prophecies were just like Jeremiah's, as we mentioned before. Hey, he was a Levite.
Ron?
No, he was a priest. Yes, sir.
I ran across some interesting ideas about the relationship between Jeremiah and Ezekiel. In some of the Jewish writings about Ezekiel, they say that Jeremiah was hated by the Jews and they called him Buzai, or whatever Ezekiel's father's name is supposed to be. And so these Jewish writers say that Ezekiel might have been Jeremiah's son, or his spiritual son, if you will. He testified kind of like Jeremiah did. So that relationship is not real clear whether that was the Buzai was the name of Jeremiah's biological father, or whether Buzai was the pejorative name that was kind of like a nickname that they used for Jeremiah. I just thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, that is an interesting I have to study a little bit more about that, I guess. I don't know. I know Jeremiah was older than Ezekiel, and so that's a very good possibility. Although it doesn't really connect them per se as father and son, but that could very well be a possibility. A lot of his prophecies were the same as Jeremiah's. We're going to be finding that he prophesied against the people in Jerusalem. Jeremiah kept warning people, hey, you know, you don't straighten your act up, you know, and pay attention. The Babylonians are going to come back and they're going to tear these walls down rock by rock and destroy the city. We're going to find, too, that there was a conspiracy going on between some of the people who lived in Jerusalem and some who lived in Babylon, that they're going to rebel. Both Jeremiah and Ezekiel both prophesied against this, and so kind of an interesting thing. We know that Ezekiel was referred to as the prophet of vision. I think we have six, if I remember correctly, in the book of Ezekiel. There may have been more that weren't recorded, but we do know that but there were six anyway. He lived with the exiles on the river near Babylon. Some of the exiles were made that came out of, and there were three deportations. And some of the exiles that came out of Jerusalem were made slaves. Some of them were imprisoned. We know that Jehoiachin, the king, was put in prison for, I believe it was 37 years. After that, evil Merodach forgave him, and he lived the rest of his life there as a free man in Babylon. But some of them were put in prison, some enslaved, and some of them had their own cities. If you'll remember that Jeremiah told these people, don't create any problems. Go ahead and go to Babylon and live, raise children, get married, build your life there. Ezekiel is telling them to do the same thing. Ezekiel was one of the fortunate ones. He was allowed to build his own home. He lived there in that small village, and he gave certain instructions to the people. Middle of Jeremiah, chapter 29, I believe it was, that Jeremiah gave instructions to the people on how to live as captives and people put in a foreign land. Ezekiel's home became a meeting place to Jewish elders who came to receive counsel. We find this referred to in a number of chapters in later on in Ezekiel, chapter 8, chapter 14, chapter 20. And they came to him for advice. Ezekiel now, and in chapter 1, as we open this up, oh, by the way, for next week, before I forget it, for next week, we want to start our study in chapters 2 and 3. So you might read up on that before next week, and I hope that you'll have lots of questions. I'll put up some questions on the next lesson about the middle of the week and get a chance to study those a little bit.
Hey,
but before we get into chapter 1, anybody have any questions or comments?
Yeah, Ron, did you encounter anything about why God usually referred to Ezekiel as son of man?
He did that quite a lot in the book of Ezekiel. Refers to him as son of man. I didn't study that to any great degree. I think he was, I feel like he was making sure that Ezekiel understood that he was a human being and that God was omnipotent and that God was all powerful, and he was putting Ezekiel, letting him know he was just an ordinary human being, and it was God that was going to be working through it.
I also ran across some information that would indicate that Ezekiel is viewed as a prophet even by Islamic people. They view Muhammad as a prophet that came later, but they tend to view Ezekiel as a prophet of God, just like Jesus they view as a prophet of God.
That actually, you know, Babylon is, that's exactly where it's at, center of Muhammad's prophecies, so to speak. Iran is an interesting place, and that's where I think that's where Esther's tomb is, Mordecai's tomb, although it's been defaced a number of times, I guess, by the Islamists. But anyway, it doesn't surprise me any that that they would consider Ezekiel as a prophet. Kind of an interesting. Anybody else have anything to say? Be sure and...
Yeah, Ron. Mute.
Go.
The one thing I saw in some information, it said that the Jewish tradition says the book of Ezekiel, along with other books, was written by men of the great synagogue. I don't know who they are, but that was just something that I saw. And it said his career as a prophet covered some about 22 years, about half the length of Jeremiah's.
Yes, Ezekiel's ministry covered about 22 years. I found some information that he died when he was around 51 or 52 years of age. I don't know if that's accurate or not, but we have, it's been given as 22 years. As far as his writings are concerned, I accept the fact that Ezekiel wrote it. The great synagogue that they're probably talking about is in Jerusalem, and he was not there. So he spent his life, his adult life anyway. Kind of interesting because Ezekiel, if his age 30 is correct, he was born during the time of Josiah, who we know is the last great faithful king in Judea. And and that was during the time he was a teenager, whenever the book of the law was found in the temple and the restoration started taking place. So I think he was probably heavily influenced by that. Anybody have any other questions, comments?
Ron?
Yes.
Didn't the synagogue system start in Babylon, and that it wasn't in Jerusalem until after it was in Babylon?
The synagogue? I'm sorry, I didn't quite understand your question.
The synagogues, instead of the temple, when they couldn't worship at the temple anymore and bring their sacrifices, the synagogue system was set up somehow. And I thought that was set up in Babylon and not in Jerusalem, because there was nobody. I didn't even think about it being set up in Jerusalem at the same time.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. Yeah. Ezekiel taught them that God could be worshipped anywhere, not necessarily in Jerusalem alone. They thought that that's where God dwelt, was in Jerusalem, and Ezekiel is telling them that, well, that's not correct. You can worship God anywhere. And that was one of his messages. Anybody else have any questions or comments?
Along that line, Ron, it's really interesting as you get into the second half of Ezekiel, second half of the book, he starts to pronounce woes, not just against Jerusalem, but God is holding other nations accountable as well, which is something that we've seen, but we have a tendency sometimes to forget that God was more than just a parochial God for the Jews. He was the God of all men.
That is correct, and he does... around the middle of 32, 33, I think, somewhere in that neighborhood, in the middle of the book of Ezekiel, he does pronounce some dire consequences on the nearby nations, nations that have been a thorn in the side of Israel for centuries. And so they are going to get their just rewards, and God is going to use Ezekiel as he used Jeremiah to pronounce judgment on these countries. And you are right. You know, God had a chosen nation, and that was Israel. But he also had a law for the rest of the nations as well. And some of them even, some of the nations even, I think probably got worse judgment than others because they were related to the Jewish nation. Moab, for one, you know, cousins. You know, they probably, and they were especially cruel to the Jews. So they had some justice coming to them. Anybody else have a comment? Or
yeah, Ron. One other thing that I found is it said Ezekiel had been called the connecting link between ethical teachings of earlier prophets and the ritualism of the priest. Just a note that they had in where I was looking. So
Okay. Well, let's go ahead. If you want to follow, or do you have? Is there someone who wants to read some of chapter one?
I'll read.
Okay.
How far would you like for me to go?
Well, let's see here. How about let's see. I don't want to break it up too much. Why don't you just do the first 12 verses?
Okay. In the 30th year, in the fourth month, on the fifth day, while I was among the exiles by the Kebar River, the heavens were opened, and I saw visions of God. On the fifth of the month, it was the fifth of the year of the exile of King Joachim, the word of the Lord came to Ezekiel the priest, the son of Buzi, by the Kebar River in the land of the Babylonians. There the hand of the Lord was upon him. I looked, and I saw a windstorm coming out of the north, an immense cloud with flashing lightning and surrounded by brilliant light. The center of the fire looked like glowing metal, and in the fire was what looked like four living creatures. In appearance, their form was that of a man, but each of them had four faces and four wings. But their legs were straight, their feet were like those of a calf, and gleamed like burnished bronze. Under their wings, on their four sides, they had the hands of a man. All four of them had faces and wings, and their wings touched one another. Each one went straight ahead. They did not turn as they moved. Their faces looked like this. Each of the four had the face of a man, and on the right side, each had the face of a lion, and on the left, the face of an ox. Each also had the face of an eagle. Such were their faces. Their wings were spread outward, were spread upward. Each had two wings, one touching the wing of the of another creature on either side, and the two wings covered its body. Each one went straight ahead. Wherever the spirit would go, they would go without turning as they went.
Okay. Anybody else want to finish the chapter out?
I don't mind continuing.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. The appearance of the living creatures was like burning coals of fire or like torches. Fire moved back and forth among the creatures. It was bright and lightning flashed out of it. The creatures sped back and forth like flashes of lightning. As I looked at the living creatures, I saw a wheel on the ground beside each creature with its four faces. This was the appearance and structure of the wheels. They sparkled like crystallite, and all four looked alike. They appeared to be made like a wheel intersecting a wheel. As they moved, they would go in one of the four directions of the creature that the creatures faced. The wheels did not turn about as the creatures went. Their rims were high and awesome, and all four rims were full of eyes all around. When the living creatures moved, the wheels beside them moved, and when the living creatures rose from the ground, the wheels also rose. Wherever the spirit would go, they would go, and the wheels would rise along with them, because the spirit of the living creatures was in the wheels. When the creatures moved, they also moved, and when the creatures stood still, they also stood still, and the creatures rose from the ground, the wheels rose along with them, because the spirit of the living creatures was in the wheels. Spread out above the heads of the living creatures was what was looked like an expanse, sparkling like ice and awesome. Under the expanse, their wings were stretched out one toward another, and each had two wings covering its body. When the creatures moved, I heard the sound of their wings like a roar of rushing waters, like the voice of the Almighty, like the tumult of an army. When they stood still, they lowered their wings. Then there came a voice from above the expanse over their heads as they stood and lowered wings. Above the expanse over their heads was what looked like a throne of sapphire, and high above the throne was a figure like that of a man. I saw that from what appeared to be his waist up, he looked like glowing metal, as if full of fire, and that from there down, he looked like fire, and brilliant light surrounded him. Like the appearance of a rainbow in the clouds on a rainy day, so was the radiance around him. This was the appearance of the likeness of the glory of the Lord. When I saw it, I fell face down, and I heard the voice of one speaking.
Wow. Can you imagine seeing something like this?
I think I would fall face down too.
Yes. Okay. Anybody got any comments about that and what they might think about in a vision like this?
Ron, I read some information about the description that they had straight legs, and one of the Jewish commentators on all of this said that they had straight legs because they didn't need any joints. They didn't walk like we walk. Take one step with one foot and then another step and another step. They just moved. I can't figure out the significance of all of that, but apparently this was something that really struck Ezekiel.
Well, when they moved in harmony. They moved together.
Yes.
Their wings touched each other, so they were all moving at the same time.
Chapter 14 tells us that these creatures were cherubim. And their faces, man, lion, ox, eagle. I have a comment here that says, all power, glory, and authority belong to God. However, he uses rational intelligences to govern, including the angelic host. The face of man may well represent the realm of intelligence among God's creatures. The face of the lion, the majesty of his creation. The face of the ox, the patient service that creation returns to him. And the face of an eagle denotes swiftness to see and bring judgment where needed. I think it's telling us there that God is all powerful. He sees everything. He's not going to miss anything. The face of a lion, that he is ferocious. that he's majestic ox. He has patience. We know that God certainly has patience. And the eagle is, he sees everything. He's not going to miss anything. And he is swift to make things happen. The cherubim are ministering spirits of the Lord. They don't deviate from their assigned tasks. That's mentioned in Hebrews 1:14. Their task shortly would be to carry out God's judgment upon a sinning nation. Coals of fire in 13 and 14 is used here as a symbol of judgment and holiness. By such means, Isaiah's lips were purged. Find that in Isaiah 6:7. Note the coals of fire upon the altar to burn the sacrifices as substitutes for the sinners. The fire of judgment seen here in the vision was soon to be exercised upon the unrepentant remnant still in the land. And God does here, through Ezekiel, constantly refers to the people in Israel and Judah, as well as in Babylon, as unrepentant, hard-nosed, sinful people. And but he is going to give them an opportunity to make things right. So his patience is there. The wheels in 15 to 23, obviously the wheels are used symbolically, but the wheel symbolizes a movement. In his government, God never is static, but is always moving. The idolatrous remnant was saying judgment would not come. However, God's reward or judgment will never fail. It's going to come. The wheels in the middle of a wheel were so constructed as to enable movement in any direction, thus speaking of God's power to work anywhere. Full of eyes speaks of the one who is all-seeing and all-knowing. God is omnipotent and omnipresent. It's really difficult. I would hate to be somebody who would try to draw a picture of this. How in the world could you do that? But it tells us that God is all-powerful, all-seeing, and that if you don't believe in his power and that he is all-seeing, you're going to be in trouble. Has anybody got any other comments to make?
Just one of the comments here that I'm looking at is the number four. We know when we look at numbers as they're used in the scriptures, it's one that represents, as it does the number 12 in sort of the Jewish economy and Israel, represent completeness. And the four living creatures could also represent the four quarters of the earth. In other words, nothing is going to escape the power and the majesty and the sight and the vision. It is complete. These four faces, you see the number four repeated a lot here. It could be, like I said, the four quarters of the earth. It could be, four different directions, north, west, east, south. It could be all of that. But it, like you said, it really says that nothing is going to escape and no one will escape God. This vision that was given to Ezekiel, and he never says that he saw God. He saw a vision or the likeness of, he saw a representation of, that was pretty awe-inspiring, but he didn't actually see God. but he saw the representative of God. And I think that's pretty powerful when you think about the number four and how complete that is. Nothing and no one is going to escape this judgment.
Yeah, and that certainly applies to us today, just like it did back in those days. You're finding a world that we live in today that is not repentant. Belief in God is going downhill. People are doing the same things now that they did back in those days. Nothing any different. So it would be a good reason for us to study this book, for us to take the lessons in this book and to heart, and look towards our own salvation in the coming days. Anybody else have any comments?
I was just going to say that I think we're going to find a lot of what we see in Ezekiel was much of what we saw in Jeremiah, which is we can see a lot of comparisons to our world today as exactly what we were seeing in Jeremiah. We'll probably be able to draw a lot of conclusions about what we see around us now, that there's nothing new under the sun and that these things have all happened before and will happen again until the Lord is done with it.
Yes, you know, I was talking to Dean the other day. My son-in-law's grandmother passed away, and they asked me to speak briefly at the funeral next Thursday. I was kind of at a loss because my son-in-law's mother talked to me, and she said my mother was not particularly religious. We want to keep it just as briefly as we possibly can, and we really don't want too much as far as biblical scripture and that type of thing is concerned, talked about. So I felt really sad when they said that. Here's a lady who passed away that was not religious, had no love for God. What in the world do you say other than reading an obituary and making a few words? You know, I was kind of at a loss. And the only reason why I agreed to do this was because she was a shirt-tail relative by marriage. So I actually talked to Dean about it. And, you know, what in the world am I going to be able to say? But I felt really sad, and looking at this book of Ezekiel, I started studying this, and I thought, wow, you know, here's a lady that with a family that doesn't have any knowledge of God whatsoever. Perhaps it'll be an opening opportunity for me, to speak to the people who are left. Perhaps it's a seed that God has given me to start. I hope so. But very, very difficult time for me to spend doing something. And I know that there's no help for that lady. Okay. If there's not any more comments or anything like that, we'll see. Yes.
Ron, would it be okay if I made an observation here?
Oh, absolutely.
There was one verse that just kind of resonated with me, and it's more on a positive note, I think, at least in my mind. Verse 28, it says, like the appearance of a rainbow in the clouds on a rainy day, so was the radiance around him. This was the appearance of the likeness of the glory of the Lord. I don't know about you guys, but when I see a rainbow on a rainy day and it's just, and the sun is kind of sparkling through that prism, it always takes my breath away, especially when it's a very bright, radiant one. And I think from now on, I'm going to look at it even a little bit differently. I always think of the promise of God, and I always think of God when I see a rainbow. But this is the way that Ezekiel saw the appearance of the likeness of the glory of the Lord. And And I just think that's pretty cool, because we get to see that. And he related it to something that we get to see pretty regularly. And I just think if we open our eyes and we really appreciate the nature around us, I really like the way that anyway, that just resonated with me. I just wanted to bring that up.
Oh, that's a great comment and a great observation. I don't know, when I see rainbows, I think, you know, I know God speaks to us through the Bible and but that's, looking at a rainbow is, gives me chills, knowing that, hey, there's a message God is sending directly to us.
And I think Ezekiel heard that message loud and clear.
Yeah, we don't have to read God's word. We can see it in the sky. Yeah. And he tells us, you know, we can see it all around. Just look around you. You know, you can see God's majesty. But that is kind of a unique message that God sends us. And it's very, very beautiful. Thank you for that, Kim. Thanks, everyone. Ted, thank you for your comments. Lenny and Dean, appreciate that. Richard, thank you for yours as well.